Wait a minute. This is how it ends? There's so many questions left unanswered.
Are you Luke Skywalker?
Yeah.
I've got something for you. A letter.
Dear Luke, if my calculations are correct, you should receive this letter at the exact moment the DeLorean vanished. I have been living happily for the past 6 months in the year 1885. The lightning bolt that... 1885? The Doc's alive! I mean, he's in the Old West, but he's alive!
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to Mos Eisley Radio, episode number 14. God, I don't even know what week it is. It's been way too long. It has. That fantastic voice, of course, is Zach Brown. Zach, it's been too long.
That's I know. Long. I think we've gotten, like, 6 inches of snow again.
Unlike
Washington, D.C., it's got, like, 50 inches.
If
you're listening to this and you're in the D.C. area, ooh.
We should just make it a point to spend 5 minutes on the weather every episode opening. How do you feel about that?
I don't know. That'd be too much like John Cena for it.
That's
like
true.
Everything that he does, he talks about the weather, like everything.
Every show intro, he's like, it's beautiful and sunny here in Silicon Valley. And I'm like, that's fantastic, John. Get to the show. But yeah, we have a whole pile of things to talk about.
It's been a little slow as of late.
Yeah, we've let it kind of build up, and now we finally have things to talk about.
Well, I would definitely say the tone in the community has changed just a little bit since everyone's found out that this game is at least a year off and not, you know, maybe 5-6 months like we were all kind of wondering.
It certainly has, and I think that's a good thing, and we're going to talk about that a whole lot a little later on in the show. But yeah, why don't we just go ahead and jump in with news from the Galactic Republic.
This just in, Terrus is under attack by a Sith fleet.
The Sith Empire is now a serious threat for Pace.
As the war presses on, the Mandalorian blockade stands firm.
Citizens and dignitaries are urged to seek shelter as the planetary bombardment continues.
News from the Galactic Republic this week, starting with a post dating all the way back to the 22nd of January. We have a new holo record entry about the onslaught of the Sith Empire. This is the newest entry from Jedi Master Nos D'Rahl, which we noted just before the show, is voiced by Lance Henriksen. Was that it? Yeah.
No, I don't remember. I just know I recognize his voice, but didn't. It wasn't like one of those things that just jumped out. I was like, oh, that's where this guy's... the same guy that does this. It wasn't anything like that.
Right. It was just kind of familiar. He's actually been in a whole pile of things from Mass Effect 1 to, I don't know, Terminator. A whole bunch of stuff.
Yeah.
But anyways, this newest holo record entry serves the purpose of outlining, you know, what the Sith went through to plan their huge attack on Coruscant and everything that they went through. And it was more than just Coruscant. It was, you know, their basically re-entry into the universe after being gone for so long. You know, go ahead.
I'm always terrible about remembering this, but so we have Knights of the Old Republic, and then Knights of the Old Republic 2 is approximately 300 years after Knights of the Old Republic.
No, we're 300 years after Knights of the Old Republic.
Okay, so Knights of the Old Republic 2 is approximately how long?
I honestly have no idea. I didn't play it. It sits kind of somewhere in between, but the big thing that BioWare has always said is that they're just kind of, I mean, they're not completely dismissing everything that happened in that, but you know, the things.
Knights of Old Republic 2 really wasn't their game.
Exactly. It was developed by Obsidian.
Yeah.
And so they're kind of just treating that as a thing that happened. And you know, as we've seen with the Threat of Peace comic, most of the storyline that they're paying attention to is stuff left over from KOTOR.
Well, yeah, the interesting thing about this movie is they talk about the preparation that took place with the Sith Empire to plan this attack.
Which took, like, centuries.
Yeah, they specifically mentioned at least 300 years.
Yeah.
Which I kind of wonder if we're going to find out some of the stuff that happened in KOTOR was, or things that were going on in that timeline was actually preparations for this massive, full-scale Civil War invasion that the Empire eventually started.
Well, I'm sure they'll allude to that, and they have some already with, you know, previous Holo Record entries, you know, the comic, all that kind of stuff. But this injury just kind of ties up some storyline stuff. They're talking about how once they finally did start their attack, the Galactic Republic's response just got like bogged down with politics. You know, they've got a shot of the Senate in there, people just arguing with each other and not getting anywhere at all productive.
Well, the other interesting thing that they talk about is the fact that the Sith was able to kind of overtake governments with puppet leaders, so to speak.
Yeah, which was kind of a huge advantage.
Well, it was a big advantage, but it also kind of sets up the idea, well, if they were able to do that, like early in the war, when we get this game and start playing it, it's going to be mid-Civil War with all of this. And what is the likelihood that we're going to encounter puppet governments that the Sith Empire has set up into territories that you would just assume would be under the Republic or the Jedi Order's complete control?
Yeah, I mean, so, I don't think they've expressed anything like specifically that says this planet is under what we would consider a puppet government, where it looks like the Republic is in place, but it's actually, you know, a Sith agent or someone who's being controlled or blackmailed by the Sith into doing things certain ways. But one of the things that I thought was really interesting was with the Republic's response being so bogged down was the fact that, you know, Jedi and, you know, some of the Republic's high-end officers were just like, okay, you guys are going to sit there and argue. We're actually going to get down to business. And, you know, without direct orders, started stepping up and attempting to at least delay it. Yeah, which they were relatively successful in delaying it. Obviously,
the other interesting thing,
outcome,
too, is it talks about how the Jedi Order pretty much had Korriban under their control, and because of all this, they lost it.
Right, right. So that's, we know in the Old Republic that the Sith have reestablished their presence on Korriban. You know, that's where the Sith warrior class starts as he's just getting into the game. And, you know, that was huge for them because there's so much there in terms of their culture, that the fact that they've been able to reestablish their presence there just totally reinvigorates them in terms of
their
presence in the universe.
It also explains, too, how the Sith are going to be able to, well, how they have control of that planet at this point in the game. So when you get the game and you start playing, if you're playing a Sith warrior, it kind of makes sense, you know, how everything's under their control. And it kind of nicely lays it out to where that away, it's just not like a bunch of hidden stuff in game you're going to miss out on, I guess you would say.
Right, right. So, I mean, we don't want to run it into the ground. It's only like 5 minutes long. Yeah. But absolutely head over to the HoloNet. Check that out. And then right at the beginning of February, we got a new post, one of the class-oriented posts on composing the Sith Inquisitor, which steps through, you know, kind of the development process and what the developers had in mind when they were putting this class together and how it's going to be different from the Sith Warrior. So did you get a chance to look through this, Zach?
Oh, yeah. I thought it was kind of interesting. Well, the emphasis, which we've talked about in the past, is definitely going to be on power and the struggle of maintaining and gaining power and controlling it.
Yeah. But
the premise of the Sith Inquisitor is you start off as a slave. It doesn't really go into detail as a slave as to into what. I don't know if you're just going to be like a slave in like a mining camp with the Sith, or did, I don't know. Did you pick up?
I don't think we get any real specifics. They just kind of made the point that, you know, the Inquisitor class is starting off from a point of not having any real power. Whereas the Warrior class, you know, starts off, you've been trained, your parents or whomever was probably in the military for a long time. And whereas
when they refer to slavery, they could be referring to the Jedi Order.
Yeah, for all we know, that's very possible. So I think the distinction, that they've already made between the influences for the class, this is just taking it one step further into where you're starting in your story, which is pretty interesting, especially for the people who get into role-playing and stuff. That just gives you one extra thing to totally riff off. I would have loved to hear Deacon's impressions of an Inquisitor starting off as a slave. That would be that'd be really interesting.
You know, the one thing, though, reading this blog, it was the one out of all the ones they've released so far. I know they've done the Imperial Agent, and they've done a Smuggler.
They've done just about everybody at this point in some form or another, I think.
Have they done a Trooper?
Yeah, it was really early on. Nobody remembers it, but I was actually looking around trying to see if they had done it, and someone was like, yeah, it's there. It's just been a long time.
I need to go back and see that one.
Yeah.
Well, what I was going to say is this one really didn't have me gung-ho excited for the class.
Yeah.
I don't know what it was. Maybe it was just the style the blog was written or what it had to say, but it was just kind of like one of those things. It was like, yeah, I don't know. The Inquisitor is just not my cup of tea.
Yeah, I think that's it more than anything, because I get the impression that anyone who's really excited about playing this class could totally get into the ideas that they're presenting here.
Yeah.
Because
manipulation
intimidation. Where you're one of those people who is gonna play a Jedi, you're gonna make all the good choices because that's just who you are. There's a whole subset of players that totally get behind the Senator Palpatine, Darth Sidious approach,
yeah,
and just want to mess stuff up.
Yeah.
I guess
that could be fun.
Oh, it certainly could be fun.
Especially plot wise in the story. Yeah, that could be a lot of fun.
Yeah. I mean, I read this and I'm in the midst of playing Mass Effect 2, and just thinking about how the storyline for the Sith Inquisitor is probably going to be just as detailed and probably longer than the single storyline in Mass Effect 2. Just gets me totally pumped for everything about story in this game once again.
You know, the interesting thing, I don't know if it works like this in Mass Effect 2, but with Dragon Age, there really wasn't so much of an emphasis on is your character good or evil. It was you made, when you would make choices or decisions, it would impact the other people around you. And so your relationships would change with that person.
It's twofold, because the decisions you make directly influence your relationships with the other people on the ship. Mm-hmm. I remember I made a choice to side with you meet two female characters. One of them's Jack, who is like this person who was tested on, who has
We're
all these crazy
about
powers.
Two here, right?
Right. And then this other one person.
No spoilers.
No spoilers. No, I mean, it's just you meet people, and this other person is named Miranda, who is played by Yvonne Strahovski, who's on Chuck. She plays the blonde agent. But she's a totally different type of character. And I made a decision to side with one of the two of them. And now, like, I can't even talk to the other person.
Huh.
It won't even give me the options. But on top of that, you also get, like, points based on your decisions,
yeah,
one way or the other. And it tells you, you know, kind of, with the if you remember in KOTOR, you had like the light side and the dark side,
yeah,
and your avatar would kind of represent that. This is the same kind of thing in Mass Effect 2, and I imagine we'll see something very similar in
the
Old Republic.
In KOTOR, like, you unlock certain abilities depending on how much you sway to the light or dark side.
Right.
The interesting thing about Dragon Age, you have a group of people, and I don't know if they're going to implement anything similar to this. I know we have the companion characters. We really don't know how they're going to work too much. They have given us a little bit of an idea, but not a whole lot of detail. And like, if you can either upgrade them, give them enhancements or special equipment, things like that. But in Dragon Age, for example, when you would encounter a obstacle or a choice you'd have to make, you always had the risk of just really making someone in your group mad. Well,
yeah,
they wouldn't just necessarily run away immediately. Like, your relationship with them would slowly deteriorate more and more and more, till finally you could get to a point where a guy is just like, you know what, I'm just going to like try to kill you for no reason. And that kind of happened to me in Dragon Age. I'm not going to go into a lot of detail with that.
That's awesome.
But, you know, if they put something like this in game, And I mean, this has nothing to do so much with the Inquisitor. It's just we're going down this rabbit hole. So
yeah, we may as well.
Might as well explore this. If they put something like that in the game, let's say with companion characters, how interesting would that be if you start making choices in the storyline and it starts pissing off certain companion characters of yours to where he might walk away or just leave your group or turn on you. And then you lose that character and you'd have to get a different one.
You know, I think that would be freaking awesome. I think it could be extremely frustrating, and for that reason alone, they probably won't let it go to that extent. But
because in Dragon Age, like when they turn on you or if they leave your party, because I had in the very last battle, like in the game, my most powerful character and the character that I lean heavily upon left the party.
That sucks.
Yeah, and I had all the good equipment on this character.
Oh, no.
Everything invested into it. And then I was like, great, I got to do the last fight without my most powerful character. This is awesome. And by awesome, I mean not. But
yeah.
But yeah, like if they would implement something like that, that would be very frustrating if you like drop 1,000 credits on new equipment and then you go do a mission and then you make him mad and he fights you or runs away, leaves or something like that. But at the same time, it's cool that they have that kind of stuff. So that a way, like your choices impact, well, they impact you and you have consequences for that more than just, oh, you didn't save this person, so now he's dead. And that's
right. Right. You know, I know that the both Dragon Age and Mass Effect 2 were developed at different BioWare studios, but I have to imagine that their tenets are the same. And,
yeah.
You know, even though the mechanic is going to be slightly different for an MMO from a single player RPG, you know, what they've done in both of those games in terms of, you know, beyond story and your interaction with the world and the characters that are around you, you know, we've seen how BioWare is going to introduce those into the Old Republic. And, you know, the combining of those two ideas together is just really, really interesting. It has me really excited to see what they're actually going to do with this when it comes, you know, when push comes to shove and you do have to make a decision and you could very well piss off one of your companion characters to the point that they're like, you know, I'm going to sit this one out. And, you know, if you're screwed, then it's not my problem. And I think that would be seriously sweet. And yeah, so how did we get there from the Inquisitor?
I don't know.
I don't know. It's awesome.
We got other new stuff. Terrace has been added.
Yeah, so this is the last little bit of official news that we have. Terrace has been just recently announced as the newest playable planet, but it's not really new for any of us who played Knights of the Old Republic. We knew that it got blown to smithereens.
Yeah. Well, actually, it is going to be new in terms of look.
It is.
It surprised me that they're putting this planet in just to have this style or atmosphere in the game at some point. And they're going with the post-apocalyptic vibe on the planet. Because as you recall, in Knights of the Old Republic, Darth Malak bombarded the planet in an attempt to stop Bastila. And so basically that's what this is going to be like. It was once a very vibrant city planet. There's a term for that, which I am not going to attempt to pronounce.
It is an ecumenopolis, which, like Coruscant, means that the entire planet is covered in city. And in the case of Terrace, it was broken up into a bunch of different areas. You had the upper city, the middle city, the lower city, and the under city. And the undercity is where the outcasts were sent, people who weren't deemed good enough to live up top.
Well, I think it doesn't surprise me that they're going this route just in terms of tone with the planet, because you look some recent popular games like Fallout 3, like what was the one we just played for hours? The 4-player shooter that has guns. RPG.
God, it's right on the tip of my tongue.
Borderlands,
yeah.
Borderlands. Also, Stalker is a recent game that's pretty popular that is kind of based around this post-apocalyptic atmosphere. And and you see that present in a lot of RPGs now that are modern-day RPGs or somewhat futuristic RPGs. And a lot of people kind of like that atmosphere. Or you see that in movies. I can think of Book of Eli, for example, is a recent one that is just...
Oh, I still need to see that.
It's good. I really enjoyed the movie. So
Right. You know, this, one of the different things about this planet as opposed to some of the other recent announcements is the fact that we do know so much of it because of KOTOR and all the backstory that was established there. And the planet actually has a kind of similar story to Tatooine in a way. This company called Logan Industries, it has a huge backstory, but, you know, kind of recent history. This company called Logan Industries. decided that it wanted to set up like a mining kind of operation on the planet. Long story short, bunch of stuff happened. They ended up leaving and totally set the place into disarray. And, you know, with the rise of swoop gangs, you know, the swoop bike was invented.
So we're talking like post.
We're talking pre. KOTOR. Yeah, we're talking pre KOTOR. Like,
oh, pre KOTOR.
Not, yeah, about. Not too terribly long before KOTOR, actually, because when Logan Industries left, that opened up. God, it's just such a detailed story. I'm gonna have a link to the Wikipedia page. You know, the Republic was on at one point, and then they left. And then, long story short, the Sith ended up on the planet, and that's where we get on the planet in KOTOR. And, you know, like you said, Bastila crash landed there, and Malak's attempt to flush her out by totally blowing it up is where we're at today.
Yeah.
So, but they didn't totally ruin the planet, which is what I was, long story short, trying to get to. Like, the Undercity is still kind of there. If you remember Rack Ghouls from the first game, which was like those like morphed human beings where if like they attacked you, you got some poison and you could eventually turn into one if you didn't cure it. those are still there.
I was wondering if they're gonna have a zombie like,
yeah, exactly,
on the game.
This is gonna be the zombie apocalypse planet.
Yeah, right there.
Somewhere
Umbrella will be involved, I'm sure.
Right. Just, and I was that would be hilarious.
Okay. We just found one.
Okay, go ahead.
Do you think they're going to put any pop culture references in this game? And if they do you or do you want that in this game?
Like Harris Pilton in,
yeah, stuff like that. I mean, you see that kind of stuff in, well, World of Warcraft, but
yeah,
World of Warcraft is much bigger than any other MMO out there.
You know, I don't know how I feel about it, and I think the biggest reason they wouldn't is because of the fact that Lucas has such a stranglehold on everything Star Wars.
Yeah.
I think they could drop some subtle Easter eggs in there, but to go as blatant as they do in World of Warcraft probably isn't going to happen, and I'm pretty sure I'm okay with that.
I'm actually okay with it, too, considering I have so much more respect for the Star Wars universe versus the Warcraft universe.
Right. I'm not wholly opposed to it, because I think sometimes it can be funny. I think especially if they dropped in like some Family Guy stuff or some Robot Chicken stuff.
See, they could do that. They could definitely play off the pop culture based around the Star Wars environment, or like Thumb Wars or something like that.
Yeah, I think I was just watching Spaceballs the other day. Like, you could totally drop in hints like that, and I think
like someone's passcode will be 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and then
exactly, yeah. And you know, or you know, like. Well, a drink you could pick up would be like Perry Air or stuff like that. You know, really, really subtle things that if you didn't know it wouldn't detract from the game.
Oh, what they but need to do is on Tatooine or on Hutta, they need to have some type of like pizza chain restaurant that's not Pizza the Hut, but, you know, it's kind of like one of those things.
I would really
love where it came from.
I would really love to be walking around the desert and all of a sudden just happen upon a comb just laying in the desert. That would be hilarious.
That would.
what I was trying to get to earlier about the Lower City, there's actually this really interesting plot point that I remembered when I was reading the lore update on Darth Hader. One of the quest lines from the Old Republic was this thing called the Promised Land. And when you go down to the Lower City and talk to the outcasts, there's this legend amongst the people there that there's this Promised Land. You know, most of those people had never seen anything above the Lower City. So this idea that they can go to this place that's just beautiful. And, you know, most cultures have some kind of story to this to some extent. And you actually end up finding the path to the promised land before the planet gets blown up. And right as Malak goes to destroy the planet, you know, the outsiders are leaving for the promised land. So we don't know if they ever got there, but that's one thing that could definitely pop up in the Republic.
At all? Do you remember if it indicates at all where that location was?
No. We don't actually know anything specific as to where it is on the planet. But we actually do know some places that we're probably going to visit on the planet, thanks to this website that this guy emailed me about, which was awesome. It was called the HoloNet Project. And there've been a couple people doing this, basically decrypting all the Erebesh that's on the site.
Yeah.
But some of the things that he picked up specifically from the Terrace site on the HoloNet was places called Death's Claw Stronghold and the Nexu Hunting Grounds. And actually, if you squint really hard, you can see a little bit of Erebish that says the Endar Spire, which, as we know, was the planet that, or the ship that you traveled on in the Old Republic. So that's pretty exciting. Some little subtle hints there.
Now, going back to the whole, just the whole, the fact that it's a new planet, this, I believe, is our 10th new planet. Let me double check.
You may be right.
I think it is 1, 2. Let's see, we got Tython, Korriban, Hutta, Ord Mantell, Coruscant, Balmora, Alderaan, Tatooine, Terrace, and I feel like I'm forgetting one more.
Dromund Kaas.
Dromund Kaas. Okay, yeah, that'd be 10.
Yep.
So what do you think? Do you think this is, we're kind of rounding off here to like a nice number? Do you think we're probably going to get like 5-10 more planets?
You know, I honestly don't know, just because of the fact that we still don't really know what stories are going to be like on individual planets. You know, we know planets are going to be big, but we don't know how big.
I mean, we remember talking about Coruscant, where it refers to there being up to 4 different tiers,
right,
that you would play on. But we don't know how these planets are going to lay out, like, if it's a grid where you keep going over and over, eventually you'll circle all the way back around to the other point on the map. Or if it's just kind of like you can only go to specific zones on that planet and that's it. I kind of agree with you. I don't really know. I mean, 10 is a good number. But then again, at the same time, if they look at each planet as just like a territory that you would go to, then 10 really isn't a lot of territories. And I think we could at least see another 15, 20. But if these planets are massive in terms of exploration, then yeah, I wouldn't. I 10 would probably be a good number.
Right.
I don't know. I feel like there's 4 or 5 more. I mean, I could pull up that planets poll we did a while back. But I mean, I know there's a lot that people that haven't been introduced, like Mon Calamari comes to mind. We know.
Like Corellia. We know Kashyyyk, would be cool to see. Yeah, Kashyyyk.
Things like that.
Any of the KOTOR planets are obvious choices. You know, I think 10 is a solid number, and we're going to talk about this a little bit more with the release date. It's a solid number for them to rest on at least for a little while and really get shaped up a little bit more so they can actually show us more about the planets. You know, if each one of these planets was the same size as the like original Azeroth in World of Warcraft, I would be totally satisfied with 10 planets to start me off with. But we just don't have any sense of scale yet.
Yeah.
And, you know, I imagine that's something that we're going to find out probably this con season. Hopefully they'll give us a little bit more detail about that. But, you know, again, it's just totally wild speculation at this point as to what else, if anything else, that we're going to see. Yeah. Oh, I remembered there was one more thing that I wanted just to mention really, really quick that I thought was kind of interesting. I remembered hearing about Terrace being in the game a long time ago. It was actually last July. There's a forum poster who goes by M. Favola who noticed that when they put out the voiceover video, there was actually a line of dialogue like directly referencing Terrace that you could pick out. I just thought was kind of interesting. So,
huh.
You know, there's a lot of people who really, really get into the nitty gritty details of like every last little thing. I'm just sure there's more stuff out there to find.
Yeah.
That's going to tell us what's coming up next. But,
how about some stories from the Outer Rim?
Let's do it.
I heard a new ship from the Outer Rim just landed in Docking Bay 94. I wonder what kind of stories they have.
You have no idea.
Stories from the Outer Rim. So I've been thinking about having this kind of interesting discussion ever since the, I don't know if it's going to be interesting. I just kind of hope it's going to be interesting. Ever since the 2011 release target,
yeah.
There's been this weird mood amongst the community members. And I wanted to know that if you think that the entitled few, you know, the people who are like, I need news, I need it now, I need this game yesterday, are hurting the development process or hurting the community. And
honestly, no, I don't.
Okay.
No, maybe hurting the community, yeah, but I think a lot of those people are just, well, I wouldn't even say they're hurting the community. I think they're hurting themselves.
I think you're right.
And if those people are standouts in the community, a lot of people are probably going to ignore them, with the exception of the few people that agree with them, and they might lump up together, and then eventually they'll all probably just get tired of complaining and just go away.
Right.
That would be a perfect world. But.
Yeah, exactly. Here's the thing to think about. To remember, I'm not a big official forum goer. I know you're really not, Zach, but there are a lot of people who do, and you know there will be a lot of posts from a lot of what seems like a lot of people complaining about the current status of the game, the current status of the release schedule. But those really only represent a very small minority of players, quote unquote players.
Yeah.
Who haven't even.
Well, the thing you got to keep in mind is the people that are the most. Okay. Whenever somebody's upset or disappointed with something, they're more likely going to complain. Because, like, you've heard the term, the squeaky wheel gets the oil or something. The squeaky. I just butchered that.
Actually, that totally made sense because I'd never heard it before. So I'll totally.
It's like
buy
the squeaky gear gets the oil or something like that. I think that's how it is. But the thing is with that is that's what everyone's going to notice just because those people are just going to want to be known. And I feel like there's probably a large people in the community that are aware of this game that really aren't saying anything just yet because they're just like, okay, I just hope it gets here, and when it gets here, then I'm going to get involved with it.
Right.
And
that's, as far as I'm concerned, is the right attitude to have about this game.
Well, there's one thing you should keep in mind with this, and this is my whole theory, which I kind of mentioned about on the last episode, as to why this game is getting delayed until 2011. Now, the thing is, the obvious thing is, well, they need more time to develop it, which, yeah, I'm sure that's probably it. They're doing something that's going to be completely different, so they want to get all the kinks worked out, you know, like a user or a fan of the show, Modem Misuser, basically said better to delay the game than to have players saying you should have delayed it. Example, Star Trek Online.
Right.
He said that us on Twitter. And I completely agree with that. Is the last thing you want to do is, you know, put a game out and the majority of the people who are excited about it get it. And then they're all going to flood the community and just say, this is terrible. I paid money for this and it's not ready to go.
Yeah.
But that aside, okay, here's my conspiracy theory reason why this game is probably getting delayed till next year.
Okay.
Okay. So in, I guess you'd say, the video game community or the online community, there's been this tone or notion recently that EA has been struggling in the past year or so financially. Their games haven't been doing so great. I mean, they've got some titles that are doing good, but they've also got they're just struggling financially.
Well, the games industry in general is just now finally getting hit by the financial
crisis.
Everything
in the games industry is struggling, but
especially EA
hasn't been doing so hot. And the rumor is that they're looking to sell, basically, and they're kind of putting themselves out there nonchalantly, like, hey, we're interested in, you know, selling the company if someone's willing to buy it. Like, I don't know who would be willing to buy it, but you could think of examples of someone like Disney or potentially even Comcast,
yeah.
or maybe even another big developer would be wanting to just like swallow up EA just so that a way they'll be even bigger. I don't see Activision doing something like that, but it's always possible. Take-Two, or I don't know, financially.
Well, the only problem you run into immediately is EA is technically not, as a company, is technically not a developer. They own a number of development studios, but at the end of the day, they're a publisher, which is much higher on the food chain. And the only people that's going to be able to swallow them up is not everybody knows that.
Yeah.
And what I was trying to say was the fact that the only people who'd be able to swallow them up is someone bigger.
Someone that could essentially merge with them or something like that. Well, here's my theory. Okay, this is my crackpot theory, I guess you would say.
Okay.
Well, basically, the fact that they are shopping their company, and the reason why I get this from, if you listen to Four Guys One Up, they had John Davidson on a few weeks ago, and he was basically touting this idea. Like, this is his big, bold prediction for 2010, was one of the four major video game companies was going to disappear, and somebody was going to buy it. And his prediction was EA. Now, shortly after this happens, they come out, and EA was the one that dropped the ball on this, as you remember, and said, hey, look, we've got this MMO in the works for April or spring of 2011, and it's going to be big, and a lot of people are like, it's going to bring us a lot of money, basically, is what they were saying. So you remember, right? EA was came out and blew that.
So
it wasn't a Bioware thing.
Yeah, so the theory is that...
Well, here's my theory. Don't steal my thunder.
Okay.
So my theory is that EA is pushing this game off because they want to make their company look that much more attractive for someone that might want to buy them. So the thing is that let's say Comcast, just as an example, or hypothetical situation, wants to buy them. And EA is like, well, look, we've got this massive MMO in the works. Look at what World of Warcraft does for Blizzard. Look at the amount of money it churns in every month, every year. And we've got something that's probably just as popular as Warcraft, if not even more popular, and that is Star Wars. We've got the license for Star Wars, and we have the rights to publish this game, and we're the ones doing it right now. And oh, by the way, we own BioWare, the people that are developing this game. I'm pretty sure they own BioWare, right?
They do. Yeah.
Okay.
They have a majority stake in the company. And so basically,
because of that, it makes the potential for EA to be a money-churning machine like that much higher. Now, if this game comes out this year, let's say, and they're still wanting to try to sell the company, and for some reason the game doesn't take off like they were expecting, well, then all of a sudden it's like, okay, you've got this MMO that's meh, and you know the chance of it, like basically they're probably wanting to unload the company with this game still in the pipe, so that a way they can just talk it up that much more and basically sell it on its potential. Which I agree, I think it's got great potential to be a massive hit. But at the same time, the last thing they want to do is release this game, it not take off, and then they're trying to sell the company and the thing that they thought was going to be one of their big, I guess you'd say, money income things. I'm running out of words. it's basically not there. And then all of a sudden people don't want to buy. Well, people will probably want to buy their company, but it's not going to be near as valuable as it is right now. Their stock might dive a little. You know, I'm getting into stuff that's over my head at this
right.
point. But that's my crack theory. I don't know. What do you think? You give it two in the head?
Well, let's think about this. So fiscal year 2011, if I'm correct, begins in March of that year.
March or April?
It's March, and then April is still technically, or it like it's the end of March and then it starts in April.
Okay.
That April is still technically the spring, which is why actually a lot of people notice this like distinction between like spring 2011 calendar year versus fiscal year.
Mm-hmm.
And it was either Sean or Eric Adams came on and clarified that their target is spring, or which is April 2011 right now ish. They're saying spring, but based on year theory and a bunch of other stuff. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what you're saying is that, you know, John Riccitiello coming out and dropping this ball early was them fishing the company based on potential earnings.
Well, yeah, because basically that's what he was saying is, oh, look at this. We've got this game, and it's going to make a lot of money. I wish I could pull up his quote.
Right. I'll find it.
But that was basically what he was saying in a nutshell.
Yeah. I mean, I'm not totally...
You don't think it's that crazy?
I don't think it's that crazy. I also think, I don't want to completely discount the idea because I get what you're saying, and it makes sense to me. But I'm not sure it's actually going to have any effect on us, or I'm not sure what the effect on the player base is going to be.
Well, it's not going to have any effect on us, well, other than the fact that the game is getting delayed. So what I guess I'm saying is this game could. Well, here's the other thing: is I listened to some people that have looked at the game. I guess you say in the video game community, and they were like, well, this game is pretty far along. And I thought, and as a matter of fact, that same podcast that episode that I'm talking about where John Davison on Four Guys One Up basically came out and said he thinks EA is going to get bought by someone else. He also was talking about the Old Republic Online, or the Old Republic, I need to drop the online, but he was talking about that. And he said he thought for sure that this game was going to come out this year. Because he got a good look at it, and he said it was really far along. So just based off of that alone, I'm kind of wondering if this game is at the point where it could come out this year if they wanted to, but they're getting told, no, we got to sit on this for a little bit just because if they are trying to shop the company.
You know, I think
they don't want it to come out.
Whether or not EA getting... squabbled or gobbled up by like a company like Comcast or somebody like that actually has an effect at the developer level or the player level. Despite that, I think no matter what, it's a good situation for us. And you know, this is what a lot of people in the community can't seem to wrap their heads. I don't mean a lot of people, but some people in the community can't seem to wrap their heads around is the fact that no matter why it's coming out spring 2011, it's a good thing. You know, yeah. The only thing that it means for us is that we have to find another game or two to play between now and then.
Uh-huh. Which, and, by the way, I don't know if you've seen the spring 2010 lineup.
Yeah.
Holy crap. I've got more games than I can handle right now.
Exactly. You know, there's just so many positives that come out of it. You know, they have a longer beta process, they get of which they get to spend so many more hours working out bugs, they get to possibly introduce more content into the game that the player base wants. I don't see how it's a bad thing, and I don't understand why there's people on the forum saying, I've been playing your games for so long, I demand that this comes out in 2010, more or less, is what they're saying. I just don't understand it.
Well, even then, the game has, it's only been announced, the announcement date was like, what, a year and a half ago?
It was originally announced in 2008, the end of 2008.
Yeah, which was about a year and a half ago. I mean, for an MMO of this scale, to expect something like that to get put together in a year and a half is kind of...
Well, I mean, it was in...
A little ludicrous.
They came out and said that it's been in development since 2006 or 2007. So April of 2011 puts us at a more or less 4.5 year development process, which as far as I'm concerned is the right thing.
The thing is, you have to look at it in terms of timeline. Is you don't know exactly how much of the company's focus... the game had at that point in time. So, like,
Austin was started explicitly to develop this game.
Okay.
And you know, they've gone through a number of revisions since starting development. You know, they were one of the early proponents of the Hero Engine, but they've had to, which is basically a game engine that allows developers to communicate and work back and forth inside of the engine, which is a pretty cool idea. But they've had to modify it heavily early on. For their purpose, you know, so they've been doing things for this game for an incredibly long amount of time, and you know, what's another year? What's another 6 months? I just don't see it. And you know, rolling that over into the news release timetable, I don't understand why people are getting so worked up about it, because it's only going to lead to like a ghost crawler incident from World of Warcraft, where you basically have people like Sean saying, "You guys are awesome, but I just can't deal with, you know, these few people who just don't understand what we're trying to do here. I don't want that to happen to the community this early on in the game." So, I guess that's my call for people to chill out and just kind of roll with it and see what happens. And, you know, EA might get gobbled up by some huge company. It's probably going to be okay for us. And, you know, it could very well help. Who knows?
Yeah, no, I agree with you. It could help. I'm just, this was my whole thing about why the game could be getting pushed back.
Right. And it sounds like I'm taking a negative tone about this whole thing. You know, I don't want that to be the focus, because, you know, this is a good thing.
To look at other people. I got to pull up the Twitter feed, and it's Twitter's being stupid. CJ Thrasher, I believe. Thrasher mentioned to us on Twitter. It's definitely curbed his enthusiasm since the announcement. I only check the website when you guys tweet about a new release. So, yeah, I mean, I think a lot of people are going to cool off on it for a bit, is fine.
Yeah, I think that's an important part of the process, too. There has to be this kind of ebb and flow of release. You know, you don't want to, in life, you can't just go from high to high to high, or else you become totally addicted. You know, you have to have some time to decompress.
Yeah, and I think people will enjoy the game that much more if they give it time for all the hype to cool down a little bit, and then it pops out and they're like, oh yeah, this was awesome back in the day when I was like reading up on it. And then
exactly,
you know, you get into it and then you love it, and then you forgot about all the expectations that you had for it and all the things that, you know, you expected to be in it and all that kind of stuff, and then you look at it with a little bit more of an open mind.
Yeah, I mean, bottom line, here's the reason why we're having a news chill out. Con season is only 2 months away, more or less. More like a month. It's going to start ramping up.
Well, Game Developers Conference, I think, is this month.
GDC is at the beginning of beginning of March.
Yeah.
Which is less on like newsy kind of things in terms of content, but still, you know, con season is starting to ramp up, and that's why we're having this kind of lull of news, so that when they do release those big zingers at conferences, you go, holy crap, this is awesome. Yeah. You know, that's a super cool thing about this game.
I'm hoping something cool comes out of PAX East.
I hope so too, because we're going to be there.
Yeah, I know.
And apparently like 5 other people who listen to the show are going to be there too.
7 other people.
I voted in the poll. You voted in the poll. Okay. That means there's 5.
Okay, 5.
Do math. Yeah, we said this on the pre-poll, which came out forever ago, and for that we apologize. But we are going to PAX East, and we're super stoked on it. I've finally got all my stuff finalized. I emailed like the hotel people because they hadn't charged my credit card yet, and I was like, "Hey, what's up?" And they're like, "Oh, we just keep it on reference till you get there." And I'm like, "Cool, thanks for telling me that." I was all worried. So yeah. I'm looking forward to it. I know you are.
Yeah, I decided I was not going to take the nerd train. I'm going to fly. Train.
It actually is pretty much just the same, if not cheaper, at the end of the day, because you don't have to park.
You don't have to park. You don't have
to. It doesn't take 24 hours to get there. Yeah, the train ride is 24 hours, more or less, like 23.
Once I found out about that, I was like, oh, no. That just took all
All the power to the people who want to take a train, because I mean, train rides can be fun if you've got like a solid group of people to go with.
Yeah.
But I'm not the type of person who just wants to sit on a train forever. You're not completely honest.
Like to sit in public forever.
That's pretty much it. I just want to lay down in my home alone. That's really depressing. Okay.
I'll keep you from slitting your wrists.
Yeah, so. But before I do anything I regret, I want to mention too, we've been getting a lot of people emailing us about like the Old Republic sites dedicated to kind of specific things, which is cool. And there's two that we got an email about recently that I want to mention. I already mentioned HollowNetProject.net, which is this guy who's going through and decrypting all of the Erebish on the sites, which is super sweet. And he's got like little tabs or little things on the side of the page for the planets, the classes, the factions, and the timeline pages. which is super sweet. And then Shock and Awesome, which is a hilarious domain name, shockandawesome.com, is dedicated specifically to the Inquisitor. So he just totally ate up the Friday update from last week.
Yeah, with the blog about the storyline.
Yeah, so we will have links to both of those in the show notes. I invite everyone to check those out. Cool. So, yeah, I think that's going to about do it this week for the show. Before we split, I want to throw a huge thanks to a couple people who left comments on iTunes. That would be JThompson6577, Deadmon 5811, who's been a huge he's been on the forums recently, but I think he likened us to phone sex callers or used car salesmen.
Oh, I remember that guy. That was okay. I'll never forget that review ever.
That was hilarious.
I will remember it for the rest of my life forever, just because that was the most unique compliment we've ever had.
And as well as Peter is just okay. Yeah, seriously, thanks to everybody who takes the time to go over there. We sincerely it's a new word I just made up. It means we seriously, sincerely appreciate it. I'm losing it, man. I'm losing it.
All a fail today.
Why don't you tell everybody how they can get a hold of us?
You can get a hold of us by emailing us, mossisleyradio@gmail.com. You can follow us on Twitter, twitter.com/mossisleyradio. You can find us on our website, mossisleyradio.com. You can call Brooks at his telephone number. Oh, crap. I forget it.
Good. You can send me an email. If you send an email to the Mos Eisley Radio address, it goes right to my phone.
Yeah.
So that's fun sometimes.
He likes it when you send him emails at 1, 2, 3 a.m. Eastern Standard Time.
Yeah, a little EST action. Yeah.
Not to be confused with ESB.
ESB? What's ESB?
Empire Strikes Back.
Oh.
Yep.
You know what? I was looking through... I was having some graphics card issues recently. Don't ask me why this reminds me of it. I was having some graphics cards issues recently, and I was looking around like supported games. Do you remember Stronghold? Just this game that
RTS?
Yeah, that our friend James tried to make us play a bunch of times, but we never successfully played it.
Yeah, he was like, "Oh, this game is awesome. You like kill people and stuff." I think that was his review of the game, actually.
This game is awesome. You kill people and stuff. I think Tac Ops had the same review.
I know. I think Tac Ops got more playtime out of us, though. Derail you from your fabulous story.
No, that was pretty much it. I saw that there was that. And I think there's a second one that we never actually got around to playing.
Yeah, there's Strong 2. What were some of those other games we used to play like?
I don't remember. We played Homeworld once at a LAN. That was fun.
Oh my gosh. Our quick Homeworld story. Remember we played it for like 2 hours and we had so many spaceships. We finally, they all met in the center. It was like 4v4.
And it was Crash City.
So big. It just crashed.
We totally crashed the game. We had the same thing happen with Generals when our friend Tommy got like 600 angry mobs.
Oh my god.
The simple act of him trying to move them across the map crashed the server.
Like he would click them all and like tell them to go to this spot, and all of a sudden the game would start lagging. Like, he wouldn't even tell them to move. Like, you were just sitting there in your base doing stuff in general. All of a sudden the game would start lagging. You were like, "Frack you, Tommy. I know you got angry mobs. Stop."
AK-47.
And then someone was like, "It's cool, I'm gonna fix the game," and then they would nuke the spot, and then everything was just instantly like on full throttle. Yeah,
freaking scud storm it. Here's something you can email us about. We've been playing Empires Dawn of the Modern World for so long, but apparently our machines are just too advanced for it now and it will never run. If anyone has a good LAN RTS that's not Age of Empires or StarCraft, please let us know what you play.
Actually,
seriously,
I know there's Star Wars Empire at War, which we played for all of about one or two lands one time, and it was fun, but it never caught on.
We tried the Lord of the Rings one too, and that never took off.
Both of them. The one that was
okay and the one that was really bad.
Wait, which one was okay?
There was
the EA one that was actually put out on Xbox. I think that was the one that was really bad.
There was a worse one, if I remember correctly. See, Star Wars, RTS, EA.
You're looking up Lord of the Rings.
Oh, that's what I meant, not Star Wars. I meant Lord of the Rings.
War of the Ring, I think is what it was called.
Yeah, War of the Ring. That was the really bad one.
And, like, the elves were ridiculous.
Yeah, that was bad.
You couldn't even play as evil because the elves were just ridiculous.
Yeah. I don't know. What we really need to do is just get everybody competent at Warhammer.
Warhammer,
that's really what needs to happen.
Yeah, Dawn of War 2 is... Oh, man. Okay, first off, Dawn of War 2 was my game of year last year. I just found out they're coming out with an expansion.
Yeah, they are.
Okay, like, on top of that, Dragon Age is coming out with an expansion.
That they are, which they delayed, but yes, it is coming out.
Oh, thank goodness they delayed that. Because I was going to say, then on top of that, Heavy Rain and Battlefield Bad Company 2 is all coming out. And I just bought Bioshock 2. And I haven't played Mass Effect 2 yet. I'm like, what the frack am I going to do? I have no free time as is.
Yeah.
And
you forced yourself to play Mass Effect the first one before you even play the second one.
Yeah, I'm still. So. And you know what? I'm kind of not getting into it, the first one.
Yeah. I think it's because I had the same thing happen to me.
Well, here's my issue with it. I think it's because I just finished Dragon Age, which is a fabulous game. And I'm sure Mass Effect is also a fabulous game, but it's just kind of like, I don't want to do more of this right now.
It was the same thing that when I went back to play KOTOR for like the fifth time, I was like, I know I love this. I love it deep down, but I just can't go through the motions again.
Well, that, you know, and I'm kind of like weary if I even want to play Mass Effect 2 because I don't want to get burnt out.
You do.
Okay, I've got to play it now because I don't want to lead up into the release of Republic. And then it's like, okay, I've been playing BioWare games for the last 6 months.
Yeah.
Hey, I'm going to spend the next 3 years of my life playing more BioWare games. You know,
here's the thing about Mass Effect 2 is that like so much of the game is just kind of watching things happen. You know, the combat is awesome and exciting. And I'm just an assault class. Like, I don't have any special abilities.
Did you say you're the salt class?
Yes, I'm the salt class. I just run around. I just run around and cure meats.
Sprinkle things. You're like, hey, I can preserve you. You want to save your game? I can preserve it.
Exactly. The original save game.
Oh, gosh. If we were ever going to make a parody commercial for our show, that would be it.
It'd have to be around salt. Oh, salt.
Yeah.
What's wrong with you? That. Anyways.
Are we still recording?
We're still recording. The show is actually still technically going on. So why don't we go ahead and end it right now? You already heard how to contact us. Do it. We want to hear from you. And on that, may this Schwartz be with you.
Take it easy.
Hey.
Are you gay? Did you steal money from American taxpayers? Oh crap, it's leaking water. I got it all over the place. I had my mouth full of water.
Hi there, JD Fackler. I'm sorry I'm unable to take your call.
Just leave a message.
But leave me a message and I'll get back to you soon. Thank you so much for calling.
To leave a voice message, press 1, or just wait for the tone. To send a numeric
pressing
page,
1.
Press 2 now.
Why won't it freaking work? I'm pressing 1. Let's wait for the
tone. At the tone, please record your voice
stupid
message.
Sprint phones.
When you are finished recording, you may hang up or press pound for more options.
Okay, you're on Mos Eisley Radio, but you're not.
It's your voicemail.
Yeah, it is your voicemail. So we were like going to call you and have you do something with us, but you're not picking up. So we'll call you back.